Sri Krishna and all the Vaishnavas for giving us the opportunity to be given this knowledge, and hopefully that we can take advantage of it, implement, understand it through our studies, implement it in our lives, and by our good fortune, hopefully we can share it with others. So these programs are meant to try to help you in your own personal study, but also in your preaching application, so that if others ask you questions, you can help them progress towards Krishna, so to speak. That's the goal. And this is a rare opportunity, a human birth. We're particularly blessed to be in the holy Dham of Vrindavan in the time of the golden age of Lord Chaitanya. So we should always keep in mind our good fortune and our sincere desire to try to please Krishna by our efforts to study the holy Bhagavad Gita, implement it, and pass on the good fortune to others. Hare Krishna. Okay, so the first thing we do in a presentation is we examine the resources. So we're going to quickly run through the pamphlet. Sometimes we call it a study guide. Sometimes we call it a brochure. I also like to call it an activity booklet, because there are many things in here that, if you take the time as you're reading, could be practical exercises for you. Or if you have a group of people you're responsible for, a study group or a class, there's some really handy exercises that might be beneficial for them as well, not only you, but them. The whole idea in Krishna consciousness is to, Vaishnava's definition of Vaishnava is that he exists for the benefit of others. And you'll see, actually, in this chapter, how Arjuna is asking questions for the benefit of all mankind. The Goswamis did the same thing. They studied the literatures for the benefit of humanity. The sages at Namasharanya were performing sacrifices for the benefit of humanity. So the aim of the Vaishnava is that he has humanity at large in mind. Right. So we'll see why this chapter is so important. Okay. So let's take a look at our brochure. Those of you who are this listening, hope you can follow along. The cover shows the universal form, an early painting from our early ISKCON books. Okay. If we turn the page, we have one of the main slokas. There are two principal slokas in this particular chapter, 54 and 55. So I have chosen 54. It's a very beautiful one. You've heard many classes on 54 and 55. And then we have our basic information bank. Is our general form that we do this together. This we go through together so that you have the structural understanding of this chapter. And it includes some new slides on study strategies today. We always try to add new information for study. And we always learn the chapter title and the size, the section, the topics, their size, and where they're located. And then also we like to encircle in the themes. What are the prominent themes in this 16th chapter? On the next page, you'll see other things that are incorporated in the study pamphlet, or what you call it, the activity pamphlet. You'll see content words. You'll see the thematic verses. You'll see analogies and examples, a reference page. So all that's angles of vision. That's how to examine something from many, many perspectives. And then below that, I didn't spend enough time on the inventory, but just a minimal inventory on some basic numerical facts to know. Facts aren't the only thing. We start with knowledge. Obviously, the essence is what we're really trying to understand. What is the philosophical understanding that we should have from this chapter that we can and should implement in our life so that we can somehow earn the association of Krishna again in the spiritual world? So the next section you'll see, and on the back of that we put from a little study guide 1881 that we have, we put the Bhakti Yoga chapters in their size, and below that particularly chapter 11, which is the one we're discussing, the universal form today. So you have quite a bit of helpful information in the form of charts. Everybody with us so far? Okay. How's everybody there? You fine? You got your little pamphlets? Good. All right. Then the next section is a handy one. It's called content words. and it's broken down according to the five topics. This chapter has five subdivisions. And you'll see words that are bold-faced, and that helps when you're reading. It's, again, it's a strategy that the mind cannot take in everything in Kali Yuga particularly. I mean, in some ages, people could remember 18,000 slokas hearing them once. But in Kali Yuga, we have to work hard just to remember even one, right? So what we've done here is we've bold-faced what we call content words. They're the important words. The other words are also important, but they're called filler words, right? So they hold it together like glue. But the emphasis is on the important keywords, okay? And that's all 55 slokas presented by section again. So again, you don't just have a massive amount of information. The secret is to break things down to a manageable size. That's one of the most important strategies in study. Okay? At the end of that section, you'll see the topic chart, which is what we'll use to fill in our study bank. And it looks a little confusing, but with a little explanation, like chemistry, right? We just use codes and numbers. So that way you have an abbreviated way to refer to what it is you need to know and hopefully remember. And maybe, if you're really fortunate, be able to explain to someone else. Following that are the two thematic verses in this chapter, 54 and 55. And you can tell by the size of the purports how much Prabhupada gave emphasis to these two slokas. In fact, in the little study guide that we have, which is nothing more than the VIG study pamphlet done in a mind map form, the sloka that's on the back is 1155. Because Prabhupada writes in the purport, he said, this verse is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. So it's nice to know that. If somebody wanted to know, well, what's the essence of Bhagavad Gita? Well, let's go to the 11th chapter. Because we always like to see what's particularly significant about each chapter. The last chapter was the opulences and the four chaturslokhi. So this one has a very important sloka. And it does have importance. This chapter, we're going to discuss that. Well, it's not universal form is not something beautiful for devotees. Why are we focusing on this? Let's skip this one, right? But there are very important philosophical points here that we have to understand. Why did Krishna present it? Why did Arjuna ask to see it? And what does it establish for everyone? Okay. And on the back, you see here just a big chart showing that the key verses are 54 and 55. Okay. What you have to do mentally is start ticking, okay, little by little, I'm building my information bank in my mind. Okay, what do I know now that I might not have known when I first began this particular session? Okay. After that, we have definitions. Now, this is quite extensive. And again, it's like a glossary, but a little bit more so. I go through the subsections and I see any terms that Prabhupada has defined in the purports. Right? Obviously, he's given you in the book the transliterations, right? But in the purports, he'll point out this word is significant, or he may introduce a relevant sloka from another point. So in here, I have put any slokas he has taken from other books, right? It's not only his books; he refers often to other Vedic literatures. Okay, so it's like a very handy dictionary for you, and we're focusing today on monitoring comprehension. That's the skill we're going to focus on today, and that means when I come across a word, when I come across a phrase, or even a sentence, did I really understand it? And if you didn't, you should take a moment, stop before you go on. Right, we have a tendency to, oh, I'll skip over it because I don't know it. But monitoring means I'm watching what I'm doing. And I want to be sure before I go further that I have sufficient knowledge to understand what's coming. Right? Even if you undertake a course of study in any level of school, usually the textbooks will begin with terms that you need to understand before you proceed in your studies, whether it's medicine, whether it's law, whether it's history, whether it's technology. You see a whole vocabulary now with the burgeoning field of technology. So that's an important thing. After that, we have analogies and examples section, and that one is I could have, if I'd had more time. I had to travel actually this during this interim, and I lost a couple of weeks of production time. I usually like to take things that are either direct analogies or philosophical points and show where they are so that you can extract the essence. What's really important here? So it gets to be quite a bit. I don't have so many slides completed on that. Time has been limited. But I tried to select some that were salient, most important. Following that is in a values objectives checklist. And again, I go through the purports. I don't subdivide this one so much. We have, I think, about three sides to this. And in that, it's followed by numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? You see that section? Everybody with us on that? That's for your own assessment. Each of us has to monitor our own progress. Even if you have the association of a Paramahamsa, right? It may not be for very long. Maybe even just one lava, one eleventh of a second. Right? But we have to take advantage of the literatures, read them, and use them as the yardstick for our progress. Where are we on the continuum? Am I at point A, B, C, D, E, or X, Y, Z? We like to think we're at X, Y, Z, but if we're really realistic, we find, well, no, we're still at A, B, C. Okay, so that helps you there. It's 1 to 5, and what we do is we circle the one that seems to be closest to us. Usually Prabhupada's defining the criterion for the highest standard. You know, what's the criterion for one who is qualified to be in the association of Krishna in the spiritual world? That's what we're aiming for. Even if you want to get a material job, you have to qualify. And even if they're giving you some opportunity at the beginning to have some on-job training, you have to at least show the proper attitude to be a good learner, right? If you're not, a submissive, enthusiastic, positive learner, you probably won't get the job. So qualification is important, and attitude is very important. So these are attitude assessments and also specifics. Do I know this about the philosophy? Do I know the Siddhanta? Everybody who comes to the temple is not on the same level. You get yatris, you get people who are curious, you get, you know, some of our elevated spiritual masters. Everybody standing in front of the deity is in a different position on the hierarchy. So we need to know where we are ourselves and where somebody else is. So we can assess. Not to be critical, but to be, wise, especially if you come to the Madhyam platform. That means at the Madhyam platform, I need to discriminate. If you're an Uttama, you step down to the Madhyam platform. But I don't think any of us here is professing to be that. Okay? So that's quite extensive. Then there's a fun little worksheet section here. I took each of the slokas, again subdivided by topics, and I left a blank. So this way, when you get a little time, you can go through the verses, read them, and then go to the section, maybe just do a section at a time, and see how many of the blanks can I fill in. Right? How many of the blanks can I fill in? Of course, some of the different editions of the Bhagavad Gita change. I know I find that. I have one source on my tablet that I use, and I listen to the recording, and it's slightly different. So that creates a bit of a challenge. But in general, it's important to get an idea of what's essential about each sloka, each verse, okay? So that goes, that again repeats all 55 verses with a fill-in-the-blanks exercise. Then you have after that your references, your scriptural references. Prabhupada again, you see how many he quotes. Not from his only his own books, but Vedanta Sutra and many of the Upanishads. There's a very nice chart here on the back from the VIG, if you have that one. This is the one we really want to memorize today. It's very simple. We want to know two things that are the reasons that Arjuna asks to see the universal form. Because basically you can ask, well, this whole chapter it's in the Bhakti Yoga section, and the universal form is not attractive to a devotee. Why is that here? So you have to know, because it has importance. And why does Arjuna ask that? What are the two reasons Arjuna wants to know about this chapter? And then we have 5 points about the universal form. Okay? So 2 and 5. We want to put these into place. We can't possibly learn it all in one session or even two, but these are the things that we should walk away with today. These are fixed understandings that I may or may not have had. Now, if you're coming regularly, you've probably heard them all repeated. I've been listening as much as possible to the other speakers. They've all developed the themes nicely. But here, this is a chance to wrap it up. After that, I call these the pearl charts. They look like little pearls. And Krishna in the 7th chapter says, you know, he's the supreme, and he's, everything is strung like pearls on a thread. He's holding everything together. The thread is invisible, but the pearls are visible. So without Krishna, without that thread, the pearls just scatter. So I call these little pearl charts. And this is this exercise is a memory link exercise. It enables us to do what we call a walk through the chapter quickly. We take one important word, either because it's the essence word or it's an unusual word, and we put that under the number, and we try to summarize in just even a sentence the walk through this section. You see five, actually there are 5 sections, but one section has 3 charts and another section has 2. The other sections each have 1. Okay? You can't tell by the colors so much. If you see, you'll be seeing our slides here. Our projector adds a little bit of a holy festival. We always have to have a transcendental sense of humor. Krishna, one of his favorite qualities is very funny. And when he sees us trying to do something, it's always like, you know, Mother Yashoda trying to tie Krishna, and everybody's laughing, and she's struggling, and she's perspiring, and she's anxious. And he gets transcendental pleasure out of that. And finally, when he thinks, okay, I've had enough fun on her, I'll let her, give her a break, you know. So there's an interesting addition here in the appendix. It's quite a few slokas. I like to incorporate this in whenever I can. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, canto 2, chapter 1, entitled The First Step in God Realization. And this is the slokas there. And we've incorporated this in the appendix. If there's time the second day, we will read some of these together interactively, as the last time we were reading from the Bhagavatam, the Uddhava Gita, right? Krishna's opulence is in the Uddhava Gita. So here in the Bhagavatam, we're going to get a more detailed description of the universal form. What we have here in the Bhagavad Gita is preliminary. What is it, you know, generally, what does it look like? But in the Bhagavatam, you'll see it's even more specific. And I didn't add it because it was getting voluminous already, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it goes even further when it describes the four ornaments of Vishnu in the 20th chapter. It's defined very specifically. So we have one slide, and I think it's from the Siddhartha Samhita, where if the club is in the right hand, or if it's upper right hand, or if it's in left or down. So specific is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you see the progression. Bhagavad Gita is introductory, Bhagavatam is further advanced, and the CC is postgraduate study. Just like in medicine, you know, you get people that they'll go into general medicine, right? But maybe they want to become brain surgeons, so they have to be very specialized. So you see that progression in our books as well. So we've incorporated a little bit of a description of the universal form so you can understand how to examine that further in other sections of the Bhagavatam. Okay, so we've done a little bit of our preliminary run-through. Let us now go to the instructional objectives in our study pamphlet here, or activity booklet, whatever threatens you less. The word study can arouse fear in the hearts of many students. So we try to find the word that's right. Advertisers do that all the time. What's the word that'll get you to buy my product? So if we call this then our little form, and filling out forms, some people love to do it, some people don't like to do it. We all have to do it in life. If you go to the hospital, you have to fill out your name. This is the basic form. The spiritual life is a hospital, right? We have voluntarily submitted to treatment. The material world out there, they're walking around in a disease state and they don't know it. We at least acknowledge we have a problem and we're taking the medicine. So we want to get the best, what should I say, the optimum results from the medication. So the first thing we have is instructional objectives. And what we're going to do now is we're going to open our folder. Abhay is going to open the folder. And we go through these every time. We'll run through it quickly because it's standard. It's like sort of the morning program. It's standard, but there's a certain security in things that are regulated. So that each time you're not emphasis on a stylistic change, but the emphasis is on the content, because the content will be different. So we've kept from chapter 3 now up to template 11, we've kept a pretty standard structural procedural form. Okay? So we hope you don't find this repetitious, but to some degree repetition is helpful, because a lot of people may not have done this before. All right. So the first thing we have is the title, and what we do is we examine what it is from the title that we can learn. I call this getting all of the juice from your lemon. When you have lemonade, you don't just waste it. You want to get all the juice. So often people overlook the assets they have. They think they need more and more and more and more. But the secret to study is how to have less but get the more out of the least. That is the wise person. Less is more if you know how to use it. So from here, we know what's the title of our book? What's the book? Bhagavad Gita. What? As it is, critical, because it hasn't been altered. And what's the title, the chapter number? 11. So everybody, now, if you were mentally ticking off information, if somebody asked you, what's that number? You'd say what? 11, right? And what's the title? The universal form. I'm going to repeat because sometimes people at home don't hear, but we'd like you to be as loud as you can to help, you know, show the interactive. So we know, then you do what we call a yo-yo drill. You say, okay, and then you repeat. So you practice your preaching. You become, what shall we say, fluent. You say, well, in the Bhagavad Gita, the 11th chapter is entitled what? What is it? The universal form. And it is a large chapter. How many slokas? 55. And then we use a trick to remember that. So 11 multiplied by what?
5.
Is what?
55.
Always for numbers, use some kind of a number strategy to help yourself. So now you know this chapter has 55 verses. Raise your hands if that's new information. Raise your hand. Is that new? Okay. Other people knew this already. All right. Some people do and some people don't. But you sort of add this to your list. One of the strategies they use in speed reading courses to build comprehension is they have you read through things quickly, 3 times, not once. And then spend 5 minutes on a list writing down each time what you remember. Anything, any points. And what happens is you train your mind to become disciplined to take in more information. The tendency of the mind is to be relaxed, or even worse, lazy. We don't like to work. Okay. So now, the other thing we have here is 54. Again, number one of the main verses. Now, we won't spend time on this now. But in this, we use a standard format. Krishna instructing Arjuna. We put in an important sloka. It's a very important one because it stresses only by unalloyed devotional service. That's the goal of the bhakta. Unalloyed, pure bhakti. That will get you back to Krishna. Mishra Bhakti will keep you here. So we don't want that. Okay? So you got that now? You squeezed all the nice juice out of lemonade, made your lemonade? Okay, next. And what these sessions do is you take all of the pieces and you have to put them together. You've had 55 slokas over a number of weeks, and it may have been a bit of a jumble on the table, so now what we do is we organize it. That's the first skill. It's a strategy. You have to organize it. And let's see what we do next. We look at it from 3 angles, perspectives. We start with the general. That's the overview. If you've ever been in an airplane, I was in an airplane recently, And they show you on the chart, you know, from Delhi I had to go to Melbourne. And they show you, you are here, or you are here, you are here. But you're up in the air, so you have a broad view. Broad means general. Okay, but I want to be more specific, so I have to come to the land and break down the topics. Topics means topography. Okay? And then if I really want to understand what the slokas say, I do the underview. I read the purports. Okay, so you get three perspectives. What's the first one?
General.
Overview, the sky. And then the next one is what? The topics, the breakdowns. You have to break it down into manageable information size. And then what's even more specific? Yeah, right. Underview, the purports. Now we have some slides to show us. Always, this is a general rule. When you want to study, you start with what? Big picture. You don't start with the details. You have to have a contextual reference. Next, you master the structure, which is what we're going to do today. If I know the structure, then I know where I am. So we're going to do that today. And the next thing we do is the pearls. We quickly walk you through the book. These are strategies used in schools all the time that are at least aware of what will help students. If they're learner-friendly programs, they do this. Okay, next, we have to organize our information, no matter what it is. Right? A kitchen that's a mess is not going to make it easy for us to cook an offering. Same way with a room. If your room's all scattered, you know, if you don't know where to what, you'll waste a lot of time looking for something, and you'll give up. So organization is the key to success, being very organized. And next? And this is the secret to studying a purport. The first sentence and the last sentence are critical. The first sentence of the purport will give you the topic. The last sentence will repeat it with an additional opinion. In between, you get the evidence, like a lawyer. He has to take you from point one to point to the end, and he has options. Usually one, two, or all three. Prabhupada tends to use almost all of them. If you really know this, you can read his purports with great ease. So he will give scriptural reference, Shabda Brahman, right? Quotes authority all the time. That's an Uttama Adhikari. He never says anything unless he backs it up. Next, Pratyaksha, the analogies, the examples. What can I perceive with my limited sense perception in the conditioned state? And Anuman means logic. Logic. You have to use logic also. Those two have to agree with sabda, or they're not acceptable. Okay, and we see the same thing now in a sandwich. This is called the writer's sandwich. Prabhupada compares the Bhagavad Gita to a sandwich. He says the Karma Yoga section is the top crust, and the Jnana section is the bottom. And the filling is the bhakti section. So here we get the same thing. We have the scriptural references, the sense perception, and the logic and induction. Okay? So if you're looking for those things, it really helps you. Otherwise, you see all that text and you think, oh, I can't read it, I can't understand it, it's too much. And now life has become such a fast, pressurized thing. People are on phones all the time and rushing here and there and no time to read. And if it's not one big caption under a picture, they won't bother. So we have to help students get the most out of what's happening in terms of information overload, how to deal with this. Okay, next. And this is the progression now in development of consciousness. Spiritual life means evolution, not in the body, but in the consciousness. And it's a progression. So this progression goes through the Gita, right? So the beginning person, if he's developed, if his consciousness is developed, he knows life gives him problems. Every morning I wake up and something's not working. So every day, either this isn't working, the phone's not working, this broke down, I've got bugs in the room. But it doesn't matter, you're going to wake up and you're going to have one of the three kleshas, for sure, guaranteed. Then I have to find, if I'm more elevated, my consciousness developed, I seek help from an authorized person. That becomes the guru, right? If I'm more elevated, I take his instructions and I follow them. And that is in the third chapter. All work has to be done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, or it keeps me here. If someone is smart enough, intelligent enough to understand that, he is very fortunate. Otherwise, he's going to stay here and suffer. Repeated birth and death, which he's been doing since time immemorial. If he does that, the benefit of sacrifice of material possessions is transcendental knowledge in the fourth chapter. And that transcendental knowledge burns reactions like anything. So the more your reactions are burned, the more you're purified, the more you understand, the more advanced you are, the more you progress, everything takes you higher and higher, more quickly. So that's chapter. So we have here chapter 4. You see that progression. Then if you follow that knowledge, the goal of knowledge is liberation. That's the fifth chapter, where you not only sacrifice your tangible assets, you sacrifice the mental action. I'm not doing it. I'm just an instrument, and that's coming up in this chapter. Subtle. If you still attach to being the doer, you're still going to be bound. So here in the fifth chapter, that leads to liberation, and when that's perfected, that means I have focused on Supersoul. And I focus on Supersoul in the sixth chapter through the meditative process. And at that stage, the perfection of that stage is realization of Krishna, which brings us to this middle section, okay? Okay, so now, and we see we've always done this before, below the dotted line and above the dotted line. We are in between the dotted lines. Below that is Karmakandya. At least that's human life accepting some authority. If they're not accepting anything, it's two-legged animal life, unfortunately. Most people on the planet are in the modes of passion and ignorance. And they degrade. There's no hope for them, really, except prasadam and the holy name. If you go above that, the progression is from karma to jnana and then astanga. Okay? If you cross the line, you can either go to paramatma realization or brahman realization. All right? And with the mercy of a Madhyam Adhikari devotee only, can you be taken to Krishna. So that is this business of the Vaishnavas. Without the mercy of a Vaishnava devotee, a person cannot know Krishna. Not possible. Very, very important point. If we don't give this knowledge to others, even if they're on the path of other yogic processes, they can't come to Krishna. Krishna is exclusive property of the devotee. Okay? And here we see where we're in chapter 11. Now, we've looked here. Now, the first one, the progression again philosophically. In the seventh chapter, Krishna tells us he's the creator of both spiritual and material energies. That's the first confidential knowledge. Second chapter, he tells us that he is the importance of remembering him. Especially at death. That's why we study the books. We want to know how to remember, not only to remember him, how to remember. Then we come to the middle section, the most critical one, the confidential knowledge, and the supremacy and the glories of bhakti. This is bhakti yoga, right? Pure devotional service. Plus Krishna's inconceivable potencies. He's creator and destroyer of everything, but he's aloof, simultaneously one and different. Now, we had his opulences. In the seventh chapter, we saw how he was the essence of everything. In the tenth chapter, we saw how he was the best of everything. This is to attract the person who hasn't developed his love for Krishna to see him in the material world. Whether it's in the spring, or whether it's in the lion, or whether it's in the monarch, whatever, he's the best of all categories. So we talked about that taxonomy. Now, why the universal form in the bhakti? If someone says, well, what? That's the big universal form. It's fearsome, and it's not beautiful, and it's terrifying, and devotees aren't even interested in it. Why is it here? So this is the point we want to examine today, that this universal form establishes so clearly what has philosophically been stated by Krishna. He has said philosophically that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that he is the controller of all energies, anything and everything. Arjuna accepts that. But he wants Krishna to prove it for the benefit of others. So this universal form has been displayed to do that, to prove Krishna's divinity. What's it do? it proves what? Krishna's divinity. It's proof. You've told me you're God. I accept that you're God. But what if somebody else doesn't accept? And it's meant to attract the person who is not, he hasn't developed his love of God, to attract their attention. It's almost like in Prabhupada says it's a godless display of energy, of opulence. So this is very important. And then the second reason, so the first one was to prove what? Krishna's divinity. And the second point is to set a criterion. Does anybody know what that means, criterion? Monitoring words. Yeah, we're going to monitor. Criterion means a standard, a basis. If you say you're God, show the universal form. If they can't, it's an imposter. And even if they say they've seen it, some people will say, I've seen Krishna, I've seen the universal form. But if they're not Vaishnav devotees, this chapter proves they can't. Because only a Vaishnav devotee who's been given the special divine vision can understand that. Everybody with us so far? So the important two points as to why this chapter is here. It proves Krishna's divinity, and it sets the criterion for imposters. You know, they said that in India, it's like an incarnation machine here. Every day there's another incarnation of God. I'm God, you're God, we're all God, you know. But they don't show their universal form, and then they often, like some say, they have to go to the dentist to get their teeth. They've forgotten that they're God and like that. It's pretty obviously unreasonable, to say the least. Okay, now let's go back again to the next. Let's go back to that one next chapter. When at the end of this chapter, what's so important is that only by devotional service can you see Krishna's two-armed form. So those of us who are sitting here, I assume you like to go to the temple and see this form. Is there anybody here who doesn't like to see this form? They like this form better. Forearms, no? How about two arms? That's your favorite form. That means you're on the topmost level of devotional service. Because only the pure devotee is attracted to that. The 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is very interesting because it says, according to the modes you're in, that infects the heart. And so if you're in the mode of ignorance, you'll be attracted to something. The heart will, and then if you're in the mode of passion, the heart will be attracted to something else. If you're in the mode of goodness, you want to worship demigods. But if you're in the mode of pure goodness, even if you think you're as a devotee, you're not such a great devotee. Anybody sitting here has to be special. How many people in the world know this, that they're attracted to just the two-armed form of Krishna? That's the topmost. Only the pure devotee can see that. This is rare. And we're sitting in Vrindavan in Prabhupada's house, you know. It's like inconceivable good fortune. We would faint if we knew. We would just... Okay, so feel blessed and feel respect for those others around you, even if sometimes their habits are a little noisome. Be very tolerant. Okay? So that leads us into the 12th chapter, which is on... If you're going to practice devotional service, it explains a lot about devotional service. Make sense? So we know that. And then in this chapter about the universal form, too, we're going to learn that it's temporary. Devotees aren't that interested in it. It's manifest when the material world is manifest. It's not when it's not. It's not permanent in the spiritual world, like the Vaikuntha form and the two-armed form. It's brilliant as millions of suns, some of the points. Okay, everybody got the basics now? All right, let's learn. We're going to go back into our folder, and we'll spend a little bit of time on skills. All right, the five, if we go back into the packet of study skills. So you know what to do with these now. Have fun with them. Okay. The first strategy, we call these strategies, And this is coming from a book I used to use when I was teaching English, to a very effective system for teaching English. Reading did not mean decoding. Most people think if I read, that means I read word by word and I know what it means. No, reading means mental actions so that I get the most out of the reading. So the first secret or strategy is I'm checking my comprehension. For instance, we asked you, what did the word criterion mean? Did you know? If you didn't, you should stop. Criterion means my standard, my basis, right? So I monitor that. That's my strategy. When you're listening and when you're reading, you should actively check. Did I understand that? Those of you who are teachers, you know that with the kids, right? You could be going on and on and on, but they didn't get it. So everybody, what's your first strategy? You're going to monitor what? Your comprehension. Right, you're going to monitor your comprehension. What's your next strategy? There's Yashoda. What's she doing? She's trying to connect the ropes. Whenever I get information, it means I should know what I knew before. Anything we learn has to be anchored to something we knew before. The first thing a baby knows is ma. Then he says ma. Everything is built on previous knowledge. So whenever I get new information, I connect it to what came before. What do? I connect it with previous information. That way I'm consciously building. The next strategy. I look into the future. I first look into the past. Now I try to predict. I know something, but where's it taking me? And the Gita is like that. In the 14th verse of the first chapter, Arjuna and Krishna blow their transcendental conch shells. What does that mean? What's it mean? Anybody know? Victory! Yeah, those transcendental conch shells, they shatter the hearts of the opponent. The signs of victory, that's that whole section. So any novel, any story, any drama, there will be clues as to what's coming. Okay, signs of victory. So it's predicting. That's a strategy. So when you're reading a purport or something, if you're clever, if you're intelligent, you'll start to read it and you'll think, what's Prabhupada going to do here? What's he trying to say to me? Okay, next. Very important, the modes of nature are how we classify everything according to goodness, passion, ignorance, or mixture of those modes. So categorizing information is very important. That's what we're doing today. You see how in this folder we've done that. We've broken it down into definitions, analogies. It's not just a big jumble. Categorizing is a very important strategy no matter what you do. And it's not fixed. In this group we could say, there are so many Prabhus. Are there so many Matajis? Or we can say there are so many people who live in India. Or there are so many people who live out of India. Or we can say there are so many people here who have Diksha. And there are so many people here who are interested. It doesn't matter, but the idea, it's a way to classify. You understand that point? So far we have monitoring, and then we have connecting, predicting, classifying, and the last one, very important, is summarizing. And I chose the Maha Mantra. What could be simpler? All truth is contained in just 16 syllables. Hare Krishna. Everything is there. Your PIN code is there. When you chant Hare Krishna, your personal relationship is with Krishna. So the ability to summarize information is what we try to do in these summary classes. Okay, everybody happy with those five? Okay, and then Abhay, you're going to show my little email number there. You got the little email chart? You can write this down. Some of you are on my email list. Some of you have been added recently. If you don't, every day we send out two posts. We send out a Bhagavatam chapter with an audio clip to read from January to December going through the Bhagavatam. And I also send out a slide, often from these, taken from these programs. That come from Prabhupada's other books, lectures, or conversations. so one graphics and whatever. We usually have people who receive that, okay? If you'd like to, just all you have to do is you write this down and you have to send me a request. May I be added to the daily list? And Abhay will put you on a forum and every day you'll get it. Okay? Plus you get access to everything from chapter 3 to chapter 11. All hundreds and hundreds of slides. Okay? All set? All right, now we're going to go into our breakdown slide so that we can fill in our form. We ready? We got you. We'll go back. We'll do a little exercise here. You can turn to this, and I'll work on my little tablet so you can fill in the right thing. See how to do it. You all have a pen? Everybody equipped? And you turn to your study bank, all right? And I'll hold this up. I don't know if you can all see it well enough. All right, so the first thing we want to write, or we should know, that we're in the Bhagavad Gita, what? As it is, okay? That's the first folder, first general category. Okay, the next thing we need to know is what section of the Gita are we in? And we use a code. Who knows that? What section are we in? We're in the Bhakti Yoga section. So put B-Y, Bhakti Yoga. Just use codes. They do it in chemistry all the time. We always say ISKCON, right? Or Pete Pamho, whatever. Well, everybody tries to abbreviate. Okay, and what is the size of this chapter? Do you remember? Everybody loudly? How big? 55. And the trick was 11 times 5 was 55. Okay? So now you've added to your information bank. Somebody asks you a question, Prabhupada said, try to know these books like law books. So a lawyer knows his law books really well. Doesn't hurt you to know the facts. Okay? Now, the next thing we need to know are the topics. How many topics do we have in this chapter? We also have 5. Okay. We have 5. And we're going to look at a chart now. Can we turn to the chart, the color chart? If you go to the back, this will help you fill that in. If you go to the end of this sloka section, you see this chart? Abhay, you have it on the screen as well in color. And you have it here for your own reference. This is in code and number form. Does everybody have it? Take a look at a neighbor, be a study buddy, and see if your neighbor found the chart. Everybody find the chart? Okay. Take a look around. Always be concerned for other people. Krishna's very pleased when we try to help others, right? If you're interested in helping yourself, that's a start. But the more you are interested in helping others, he really blesses you. He really blesses you. This system is a preaching movement. Right. Okay. Some of us are a little bit shy about that, but it helps break the ice if you say, oh, there's a person next to me and I'd like to help them. It's just kind. Be kind. All right, so you see, and we use the color section on the color spectrum, orange and yellow and green and light blue and darker blue. Okay? So let's do the numbers first, because they're sort of easy. And I always look for a number trick. So I see the number 3 two times, right? You see the number 3 two times? And I also see that 12 and 9 are multiples of 3. Okay? So I've got 23, and then I have 3. Very small. That's a very important section. Time, I am. And then I have 4 times 3 is what? 12. And 3 times 3 is?
9.
All right, because this might seem a little difficult, but if you play a game with your mind, it's fun. So I know the second section is 23. I'll go this way. Second section is 23. What's the third section? 3. And what's the next one? 12. And what's the next one?
9.
Okay. 23 and 3 and 12 and 9. All right. And we can see in terms of size what's important. And the first one is the only, it's an even number. 12 is an even number. It's how many slokas? 8. All right. So go back and fill in your chart now. If you go to the back, it's on the board. So in the topic size, you'll put 8, and then what will you put? 23, and then what? 3, and then what? 12, and then? 9. Okay? Did you fill it all in? Check your neighbor. Okay. Now this, for some people who like to come and just listen to classes, this might say, oh, this is too much work. But actually, it's like yoga. You know, you do a little bit of exercise and you make your body fit. And the brain is a muscle. So the more you use it, the better off you will be, right? Okay, so we know in this chapter, we can now add to our information that we have 5 sections, and they are 8, and they're 23, and 3, and 12, and 9 in size. Well, that's good to know, but what's in them? What do I need to know? Okay, so that's important. That's what we're really looking for. We're getting to essence now. So the first one is Krishna is going to describe the universal form. Arjuna is going to ask him in the first 4 slokas, and in the next 4 of those 8, Arjuna is going to begin describing the universal form. So what's the first topic? Krishna? He's going to introduce himself as the universal form. So you can fill that in on topic title. You can put K over UF. Okay, you got that filled in, okay? K over UF. This takes a little trouble. It's just like you go to the FRO, you go to the hospital, you go to the school, you have to fill out forms. But once you do, you've got it in place. Because otherwise, it's the same thing every day. I just run through all the slokas and I have no idea where I am. Unless you've read so much, it's just already mentally you've done that. We have to take a little extra time to get it. So the first part of it is Arjuna wants to see, he asks humbly, I want to see your universal form to prove, right, that you're God for others, and that there's a criterion so the imposters can be spotted. And then in the next 4 of those 8, Krishna's going to say, all right, here I am. So that's Krishna tells us in those first 8. We see this first section philosophically, there's a lot in the purports. Now, it's interesting, Sanjaya is quoted a lot in this chapter. And you want to say, why? Usually, sometimes it's just Krishna or Arjuna and Krishna. But why so many slokas by Sanjaya? 23. Because Sanjaya proves that Arjuna is not just having a hallucination, right? And even the devas are seeing it. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, one might think Arjuna's dreaming. Well, you just had it's been a heat stroke. Literally a heat stroke. Or he's making it up. No. So we have to verify it. And it's interesting how he has to explain it to someone who's blind. So that's an advantage, because even though he sees it by the vision of the heart, by the mercy of Vyas, he has to give a description so that someone gets some kind of understandable notion of what this universal form is like. And we benefit from that description. I don't think any of us here has seen the universal form. Has anybody here seen the universal form? No? You didn't. You probably wouldn't be able to see again if you did. It's so bright. Right? So this is verification. And later we'll see that with the demigods and the more elevated beings, they see it. So we're getting confirmation in this chapter on both sides that this is not a dream or a hallucination or a figment of his imagination. It's real. Okay? That's important. It's proof. All right. So 23 slokas. But we have this concept in both of the Gita and the Bhagavatam, especially, You have speaker inside of speaker inside of speaker inside of speaker. So it doesn't get too boring. It's Vyasadeva who's telling the Gita, right? But then Sanjaya is also speaking. And then also Krishna and Arjuna are speaking. So you get only one or two verses by Sanjaya. But after that, Arjuna, you get him describing to Dhritarashtra, oh, Krishna is speaking, Arjuna is now speaking. But it's the description of the form for someone who can't see. And that's us also. We can't see it. Okay? Everybody understand that point? 23 slokas. And that gets a little bit repetitious, but we're going to go through those quickly. We want to do that today. And then the three, we're going to stop. We're going to do the first three sections. And tomorrow we'll do the last. We'll do the slokas. Three sections, only three slokas. This is critical because after seeing it, Arjuna, who's in a state of wonder, we'll see how he switches from Sakya Ras to a state of wonder. He says, what is your mission? What are you doing? I need to know what it is. What is this? And this is famous one time I am. The all-devouring destroyer of the worlds. Okay, famous sloka. It was quoted when the atom bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Time I am. Okay? So we're going to do those first three sections today. Everybody got that? Okay? Let's now go to the slokas. And do we have the pearl verses in the sloka sections? We've done that, Abhay. We've broken the sections down by color. All right, now again, this is the sort of the walkthrough thing. So what we do is we prepare ourselves. I see the word dispelled, inexhaustible, cosmic, universal, multicolored manifestation, sea, and eyes. From 5, 6, and 7, Krishna speaks, and in the first four, Arjuna speaks. And he's asking, he said, by hearing about you, my ignorance has been dispelled. You're inexhaustible, but I want to know, how do you enter this cosmic manifestation? Show me your universal form. Humbly, he asks. He doesn't command. Krishna answers by saying, my forms, look at them, my multicolored forms. And in this is all of my manifestations, buried as they are. And you can see everything from one place, but I have to give you the divine eyes. So now let's go through the verses and see how we do. What we do is I read, and when I stop, the first one was dispelled, you have to loudly say the next word, okay? That way you get what's important in those. We're monitoring comprehension this time. Arjuna said, by my
hearing.
Remember, that's the key word. By my hearing, the instructions you have kindly given me about this most confidential. Remember, confidential. Chapter 9 was confidential. Spiritual subjects, my
illusion
is now has been dispelled. I have no doubt. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? Next picture. This is an infinity sign. Inexhaustible. O lotus-eyed one, I have heard from you in
detail,
chapter 10, about the appearance and
disappearance
of every living entity and have realized your inexhaustible glories. You can't run out of things to say about Krishna. Ananta Dev has been reciting his glory since time immemorial. So number two is inexhaustible. What we're trying to do is give you a visual impression of the point. Next slide. Cosmic is the word. He wants to see how did you enter, because the cosmic manifestation is inert. Unless the Lord enters as the super soul, it's dead. Oh, greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you
here before me in your actual
position.
Yes, his two-arm form. That's his actual position as God. He said, as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered this, the cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form. Now, he doesn't ask for his own interest. He's asking for us and the common man. Next. Now he's being really humble. He doesn't demand. It's not the way to see God. If you think you can demand, order him around, you have to be at least Radharani or Mother Yashoda or one of his playmates. But on our level, it doesn't work. If you think that I am able to
behold
your cosmic form, if you think I'm able, right? O my Lord, O master of all mystic power, then kindly, right? Kindly show me that unlimited universal self. He's very humble. You can't order God around. He's not your order supplier. Now, Krishna starts to speak, right? The Supreme, and what's the word? Multicolored. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, O son of Pratha, see now my opulences, hundreds of thousands of very divine multicolored forms. Like a big light show, strobe light show. Next. What's the word?
Manifestations.
Now there are so many pictures when I went online of the universal form. So many artists have rendered it. Not just our own artists. Many, many, many varieties of the universal form depicted. Oh, best of the Bharatas. See now the different
manifestations
of, now he's listing who's there in the form, the Adichas, the Vasus, the Rudras, the Ashvini Kumars, and all the other
demigods.
Behold the many wonderful
things
which no one has ever
seen
or heard before. This is the first time. And this is very important because Arjuna is reestablishing the parampara. So he has to be seeing this. It has to be established with Arjuna. Now what's the word?
See.
It's repeated. O Arjuna, whatever you wish to
see,
behold at once in this body of mine. This universal form can show you whatever you desire to
see
and whatever you may want to
see
in the future. So the universal form is past, present, future, anything and everything imaginable in one place. Is that conceivable to our minds? Not really. Everything moving and
non-moving
is here. Partially? No, completely. In one
place.
Next. But what's this?
Eyes.
But you cannot see me with your present
eyes.
Therefore, I give you
divine
eyes. Behold my mystic opulence. Okay. Now, we're going to run through these others pretty quickly. I'm not going to try to do the pearl thing. We're going to just read through it because once Sanjaya starts speaking, there are almost no purports. There are a few, and we'll discuss maybe those later with special slides. But now we're going to see what Arjuna sees as being explained to Dhritarashtra, and for our benefit too. Okay? Sanjaya said, now Sanjaya is going to speak just one sloka, and then he's turning over the microphone to Arjuna. Okay. Sanjaya said, O king, I was having a hard time seeing these, having, what is that? Okay, this. Oh, having spoken this, I'm sort of in an awkward position here. Maybe I should just read it from my tablet. Is it? The Supreme Lord, all mystic power, the personality of Godhead, he displayed his universal form to Arjuna. So now he's showing, you see all the heads and multiple faces and everything, and from eternally the past to the future. Okay, next. Unlimited. Arjuna saw in that universal form unlimited what?
Mouths.
Unlimited. Unlimited. Wonderful visions. It's repeated. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine upraised weapons. It's not a friendly form. Okay. Next. Celestial here. Okay. I have a hard time. Okay, he wore many celestial garlands and garments, and many divine scents were smeared over his
body.
All this was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, and all expanding. Next. Oh. Now he's trying to give in the 12th verse because there are 12 adityas, right? The 12 adityas. This is comparing everything to hundreds and millions of suns. If hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once in the their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. Could anybody really watch that? Hundreds of thousands of suns, not so much. Quickly, next one. That Arjuna could see in that universal form of the Lord, unlimited of the universe, situated in one, although divided into many, many thousands. So you see a picture of that. It's completely inconceivable, really. Next. Astonished. Then bewildered and astonished. Right. His hair standing on. Arjuna bowed his head to offer and with folded hands began to pray to the Supreme Lord. Now at this point he goes from friend to wonder. The rasa changes. This is a secondary rasa. Arjuna said, "My dear Lord Krishna, I see assembled in your body all of the and various other living. I see Brahma sitting on a lotus flower, as well as Lord and all the sages and divine." So he's seeing it from Brahma down to Sesha. That means from the top of the universe down to the bottom. He's seeing the whole creation. Next. O Lord, of the
universe.
You're going to have to read it. Okay, the wonders of unlimited forms. I see you in your body, many, many arms, bellies, mouths, and eyes, expanded everywhere without
limit.
I see you with no middle and no beginning. Unlimited. Next. We'll skip that again. Radiance. You get the idea. It's hot. It's glowing. It's fiery. All right? Your form is difficult to see because of the glaring effulgence spreading on all
sides.
Like blazing fire. Everything is bright and luminous. Immeasurable. Radiance of the sun. Yet I see this glowing form everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs, and discs. Okay, now. You are the supreme objective. You are the unlimited resting, the ultimate resting place of this universe. You are inexhaustible, and you are the oldest. You're the maintainer of eternal religion, the personality of Godhead. This is my opinion. So he's glorifying Krishna when he sees this. Now again, the image is again fire. Okay? You are without
origin,
middle or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless forms and the sun and moon are your... I see you with blazing
fire
emanating forth from your mouth, burning the entire universe by your own
radiance.
Hot, fiery. Next. Perturbed, he said, although you are but one, you are spread throughout
the sky
and the and all space between. Oh, great one. Boy, I'm sorry about this, but I can hardly see this. Okay, seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed. They're disturbed. It's not an easy sight. Next. Now you see the hosts of demigods. They are able to see. Here he is, the form from which Brahma is rising all the way up to the universal form. All the hosts of demigods are surrendering before you, and some of them, very much afraid, are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages and perfected beings crying,
all peace,
are praying to you by singing the Vedic
hymns.
So they're fearful, they're praying. Okay, next, beholding all this wondrous manifestation of the Lord Shiva, the Adityas, the Vasus, the Siddhas, the Vishvadevas, the two Ashvinis, so many things, the forefathers, the Gandharvas, the Yakshas, and the perfected demigods are what? Beholding you in wonder. So we're getting a picture of confirmation from the higher beings. Next. And when all of these inhabitants with their demigods are, they're disturbed at seeing your great form with its many faces, eyes, arms, thighs, legs, and your many terrible, and as they are, so am I. All right, next. Equilibrium. Oh, all-pervading Vishnu. Seeing you with your many radiant and you'll have to forgive me because all right, and your great glowing eyes, my mind is perturbed by fear. I can no longer maintain my steadiness or equilibrium of mind. So now he's really being affected. All right, and that's be gracious, O Lord of Lord and refuge. Please be gracious to me. I cannot keep my balance. Seeing you with your blazing, death-like faces and awful in all directions, I am. Now he's asking Krishna to be gracious. And the word gracious comes from grace. Everything comes by grace from Krishna, no matter what it is. Dhritarashtra, there he is. All of this... of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings and Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and our chief soldiers also. What's going to happen to them? Next slide. Are rushing into your fearful mouths, and some I see trapped with heads smashed between your teeth. Not a very pretty sight. As the many waves, it's going like waves of the rivers flow into the, so do all these great warriors enter blazing into your mouth. Next. I see all people, this is another analogy, rushing full speed into your mouths as moths dash to destruction in a blazing fire. Oh Vishnu, I see you devouring all people from all sides with your
flaming
mouths, covering all the universe with your, you are manifest with terrible scorching rays. Look at that. I mean, really. Next. Now he's going to end by asking, O Lord, okay, of fierce of form, please tell me who you are. I offer my obeisances unto you. Please be gracious to me. You are the primal Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your
mission
is. Now this ends that whole section, and we'll just have three more slides. The famous one, time I am, be an instrument, and fight, because they've already been put to death. Okay, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, time I am, famous sloka, time I am. the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to destroy all people, with the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. But, therefore, get up and prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies, and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savya Sachin, can be but an instrument. That's all we are. That's all we can be, an instrument. Next. Now he's ordering him to fight. They're going to be killed anyway. He's just an instrument. All right? Okay, Drona, Bhishma, Jayadrata, he names so many of the warriors, and the other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore, kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight, and you will vanquish your enemies in battle. And we'll stop there. I'm sorry, from the position and the projector changes the type a little bit. I have a hard time seeing. So we have covered the first three sections. As of today, you should know the chapter title, the size, the sections, the importance of the first eight verses, and the importance of Sanjaya explaining this to Dhritarashtra. You should also understand why Arjuna is being asked to show this form, to prove the divinity of Krishna and to prepare people to be alert, to not be bewildered by imposters who claim to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's our ending slide there. He says, I give you divine eyes. Unless one has been graced by Krishna, he can't even see the universal form. Thank you so much. We have some prasadam for you. I'm sorry we ran over late so far. It's much to cover. It's a big chapter. Tomorrow we'll finish the last two sections. We'll read a little bit from the Bhagavatam, description of the body of the universal form. Okay, and we have a few slides that explain the 12 rasas and also other universal forms that were seen. And what is another important one like that? Mostly, the rasas and that Krishna, the famous sloka in the Bhagavatam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, some very important slokas to know. Thank you so much for coming. And in this hot weather, everybody's sort of tired. My inability to read this at an angle. Please forgive me. Vancha kabatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebho vaishnavibhyo namo namaha.